We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News & World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
Hello, all you monsters out there, and welcome to Post-Show Recap's coverage of The Witcher Season 2. My name is Mike Bloom, back with the anti-penultimate episode of The Witcher Season 2, Episode 6. Yes, we're still talking about The Witcher, not to beat a dead horse, Angela Bloom.
No, why would you say that? I'm so sad.
It's how the episode opens.
Yeah, but I know, but I don't like it.
I mean, yeah. Angela, I don't think we've actually talked about this on a podcast. You are a notable animal lover.
Yeah, like if an animal dies in a story, like the story is dead to me. So
much like the animal.
Yeah, so this was a little rough. Didn't like it. In fact, when I rewatched the episode, I skipped it.
It's a rough scene.
Yeah, like I watched right up until it. And then as soon as they got up to Roach, I like was like, skip, skip, skip. And I was like, this is taking forever.
Damn you. Chernabog is all I can say.
The Chernabog.
But we're going to go from some darker days to some lighter times, quite literally from a lighting perspective. We're going to have a little bit of time with Nenica, another character that is introduced. The pieces are finally coming together here. I guess the subtitle of this episode should be When Yen Met Ciri, or I guess more appropriately, the Yennefer and Geralt reconciliation.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is like a great episode because I think a lot of people have been waiting for this moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the entirety of season one was like, I don't know, everyone was like, when are Ciri and Geralt going to meet? They didn't even meet till the end. And then not only that, but Geralt, Ciri, and Yennefer are like a bit of a fam and they're just meeting.
Yeah. So here we are. We sort of are connecting parts of the triangle, though, as we discover, maybe one corner of the triangle is a bit more nefarious than the other two corners.
Yes, well.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll see, you know, some acceleration on the part of Istrid. We'll see Rience continues to make an appearance. A burn can't keep a good man down. So
yeah, lots, but he sucks.
Lots of things happening across the universe of The Witcher. Of course, some stuff off the top. We only have a couple more weeks left of the whole shebang. But of course, if you want to send in your feedback, you know what to do. Just email mike@postshowrecaps.com. We're talking Witcher in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord as well. You can become a patron at the $10 level at postshowrecaps.com/patron. You can also subscribe to the Witcher only feed at postshowrecaps.com/WitcherPod. Now that that is all out of the way, I guess let's get, you know, the horse in the room out of the way as well.
Yeah, Roach dies. Moving on.
We'll spend a little bit of time.
I don't want to spend too much time on it, though.
So we open the episode on the trail, right? Like, we are back on the trail?
Well, no, they've left. They've left Kaer Morhen.
Right, and
they're...
Geralt sort of, like, took her, assumingly, after everything that happened with the mutagen last episode.
Yeah, he's going to take her to Nenica's. This is his plan the whole time, is we're going to Nenica's because that's where I learned magic, and it's, like, a... Yeah, obviously, we'll see in a few scenes that it's like a very calming place. It's a gentle place. It's gonna like, it was
the
probably
exact opposite
a
of Kaer Morhen.
Yeah, I think it was probably a very nice place for him to go as a young lad, given his background in being a orphan and then being a mutant and then also watching all your mutant friends die.
And also, admittedly, Kaer Morhen's a little bit of a sausage fest.
A little bit of a sausage fest.
We need to change it up a little bit. You're just dealing with the harsh father figure that is Vesemir. Like, let's bring in some Nenica here.
Well, yeah, and so this is, he points out, like, this is where I learned magic. But, so yeah, he's bringing Ciri there because I think he thinks Nenica will be able to help her.
Yeah, see, I was a little confused because there's so much mention of the trail in this conversation.
And maybe they're on the trail. I don't know if they're on,
happened to be
yeah,
on the trail.
Exactly. But the whole point is they're leaving Kaer Morhen, and so it's like it would be a coincidence. But either way, I think that they're just talking about how she, like, the trail is more than just a physical thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a
it's
path. Yeah, it's a path that you take, and you know, you might think that you want to be a mutant, But what that's going to do is then the next thing you're going to want is revenge, and you're never going to be satisfied, basically.
Yeah, I mean, again, much like the core conceit of Yennefer, right? This idea of, okay, you have this one thing, but the grass is always greener, or there's always the next hill to climb, in a manner of
speaking. That's how I feel about our home and how I constantly need to redecorate.
Yeah, it's this idea of, like, you sit down for 5 seconds, you're like, oh, no, I think this would be better.
Yeah, I'm looking at the curtains I just hung in here to help with the sound quality, and I hate them.
True story. On multiple counts.
On multiple counts, this is like a curtained room that I hate.
So here comes Chekhov's Chernabog, which was introduced. This is, I'm assuming, the same Chernabog that, you know, when Ciri called out to Geralt during Valdolduja, we saw this little demented creepazoid show up and it flew off. Now it's coming back. I mean, Geralt is, I think, trying to catch it as well.
Well, yes and no. I think that he, at this point, he has an inkling that, you know, or knows for a fact that these things are after Ciri. So I think he's under the impression that they're after her to hurt her. So he's like, I got to protect her. But yeah, it's that at one point he says this is a type of Chernabog. So this is another mutant. So yeah, it's the one that came out of the crack.
Yeah, so he's going to try blasting it initially.
Yeah.
But it flies over to Ciri, who is on Roach, takes a couple claws, luckily off screen. But we'll get to sort of the after effects of that at the moment. Going back to Kaer Morhen, here is brooding Vesemir.
Yeah, so he's bummed because, I mean, he wanted everything to work. And he's like, I think I got too in my own feelings about it.
Right, it's this idea of I was so committed to the cause that I didn't realize sort of the human cost available. And Triss is coming in from her own perspective, having just experienced the Dolduja of something's really up with Ciri.
Well, he's like, so she's like, not only should you not have made her a witcher, but there's more to it than that. Like, she's going to be the death of us all. I have to leave, basically, is what she says.
So Vesemir suddenly, like, hits the ground and we hear a snap.
Yeah, so I think his he clutches his amulet. So it must have been that, like, it was warning him.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because I wouldn't say Rance is a monster.
He's not. So I don't know. Maybe there was, like, a ward or something that was, like when he entered Kaer Morhen, something went off.
Yeah, this idea of, you know, like, an alarm goes off when he breaks something.
A ward is a magical barrier that keeps you protected.
See, I was thinking ward like a young little boy.
No. A ward, which is like in Harry Potter when they put up magical spells like around them in the Deathly Hallows to like protect them. Yeah, you ward something, like you ward the evil away.
And I hope The Witcher earns many awards.
Oh, God.
Later on this year. So, yeah, we hear another familiar snap. Rience is back. He is sporting, you know, less hair and skin than the last time
we
saw him.
Like, rough.
Yeah, he looks fairly rough. I mean, this is not, you know, Tyrion in Game of Thrones, where they sort of obfuscated him getting half his face cut off to just having a scar, but, like, still pretty gnarly. Again, on the same level as the Hound, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is what he looks like in the games and everything, too, from what I've seen.
So we see a trick that he's actually going to use a couple times here. He loves to blast the Ring of Fire. Real Johnny Cash fan. Because he knows that, like, you can't hop out of it.
Well, yeah, at first Triss is like, I can put out that fire, NBD. And he's like, oh, how precious. Like, how basic of you, you basic bitch. And, like, then he puts a ring of fire around her.
And so we get a small fight between these guys, but Vesemir is very clearly outmatched to the point where he, like, breaks a broomstick to try to fight him off, and Rience just straight up burns through them.
Yeah, and then the battle ends with, like, Vesemir being knocked out and, like, injured, and Triss sort of yelling for Lampert because
Rience disappeared, and we'll find out later that he did not disappear empty-handed.
No, and the reason he was there is because he's looking for Ciri, and he got from Yaskir in the last episode that
remember that they had gone to Kaer Morhen. All he told me about was this, you know, foothold in the mountains, and that is sort of the lone piece. He's chewing on crumbs at this point in the hopes of finding the loaf of bread.
Yeah, and like, he wasn't wrong. I mean, Ciri was there, he just missed her, you know.
Again, seems to be a running theme.
It's a little
of
lucky
the running theme, or perhaps a writing theme, as here, Baba Little Roche Bastion. Yeah, this is,
I hate you,
it's rough. It's a really nice scene, though. I do enjoy the care that Geralt has for Roach. It's a little bit, you know, shades of Kristoff and Sven from Frozen, where he talks to Roach. He doesn't make Roach talk back, unlike that character, but he really confides in Roach. I think as someone who lost further and further faith in humanity, he was able to find some semblance of a connection with the animal proper.
Well,
so
Roach is the name of his horse like six times over. I think he just likes animals.
The wound a bit too, right? Is that, well, this is not going to be the last Roach. Much like cockroaches proper, they will pop up from anywhere.
Yeah, but it's still a sad.
Yeah, I mean, and he basically puts her down.
Well, yeah, he has to because she's dying. And so he puts her out of her misery. But I couldn't watch that again. That was too much for me.
I'm pretty sure, I might be talking out of my butt here. I'm pretty sure I saw something where apparently Henry Cavill, I don't know if he like wrote this scene or just like heavily recommended it happen. So
I don't know.
I guess, thank you. Or in Angela's case, how dare you put
this in here? Yeah, I don't know. I felt like it was just unnecessary for me, but whatever. We move on.
And so we move on to do some monster killing here. Right. Where basically Siri's going to be bait for a hot second.
Well, yeah. So he turns to Siri and he's like, hey, are you ready for this? Because we're gonna take it down. And she's like, I'm ready, Dad. And she goes up on the mountain and she stands there.
Yeah. And so the Chernabog, we see a little bit of like weird Chernabog vision. Very dark.
Yes.
I guess maybe the Chernabog.
Well, it was kind of like a fisheye vibe.
Yeah. It was more of like a cave creature, I suppose. But it flies towards her. And just as it does, this is a badass episode for Geralt, I will say, in terms of fighting.
This was like video game levels.
He does like a huge jump with a knife and just basically carves a gash into the side of the Chernabog to send it careening to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So they kill it and then they leave.
Yeah, Roach's revenge is done posthumously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the credit sigil, I was trying to make heads or tails.
It's a hand with flame.
Okay. I thought it was somebody falling. These are really Rorschach tests.
They are. But it's definitely, I think it's supposed to be the hand. Like, it's a hand, like,
yeah,
I'm trying
like,
to,
it's like a spindly hand.
I'm showing you, but, like, this is a podcast medium, so you'll all just have to imagine me flicking my hand.
Yeah. Oh, my God, you caused a fire.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you were Rhiannon the entire time.
I was. I'm not. Am I?
You might be a Doppler, pretending to be you, pretending to be Rhiannon.
Oh, if only I could be a Doppler.
Is that something you desire?
I don't think it would be a bad thing.
To be a shapeshifter?
Yeah, it sounds great. I could just like not be myself for a little bit. It sounds delightful.
I mean, that's a discussion for another day.
I need a break.
I just need a break from being myself.
Yeah. So, I want to be like Giselle Bunton.
Giselle Mutton?
Bunton.
Who's Giselle Bunton?
Never mind.
What my shapeshifter canon goes to Mystique from the X-Men.
Oh yeah, that sounds good too.
Yeah, I mean take your pick of shapeshifters. Let's shapeshift into another storyline here. We're gonna focus a lot on Syntra because now that Kahir's here, three is a crowd. Basically,
it is a crowd. Yeah. So we're in Syntra and Francesca and Frangilla are just kind of walking along and Francesca's just idly making roses bloom again.
She belongs in our family.
Yeah, she does. So she basically tells a story about how when she was a little girl, her mother and her used to pick flowers together. Mm-hmm. And then when her mother died, she saved one of the last flowers that they picked. But as it began to wilt, you know, she felt it within her and touched the flower and it bloomed again.
Yeah, but she also provides this interesting tidbit that her father tried to lead a crusade against her, which does make sense. Remember
well,
that.
Well, what's wild is that she says it's because he found me doing magic.
Yeah, well, because let's remember that, you know, all of the elves up until the one that gets delivered this episode were half elves.
Yeah.
Because there was never going to be a pure blood elf for generations. So I guess assumingly her father was human.
Yeah.
And I guess had no knowledge or maybe denied any magical abilities.
No, I think what happened was that my guess and my understanding is that like Francesca's mom, after he died, Francesca's dad was like, we don't do that. Like we don't use magic. Like magic is the devil's, you know, whatever. And so like tried to lead the village in a crusade against her. She killed him and the village put up a statue in her honor.
Yeah. So,
sounds great.
Again, this is Francesca.
For Francesca.
I'm glad we're seeing shades. I feel like the Francesca has kind of receded a bit as
a
character for me. I know that Stefan sort of asked in one of his questions for this week, like, am I supposed to like Francesca?
I think you are supposed to like Francesca. I think you're supposed to feel that she is a little guarded, but for reasons that make sense. You know, like she has her walls up.
I don't know. I think I just liked her more in her introduction. Honestly, she was more interesting to me in that regard when she was like, she was she was full of faults, but she was pursuing something, as opposed to now where it kind of has just been her kind of sitting back the past few episodes.
I think I get the vibe that she's still pursuing it, though. Like, I get the vibe that she's put everything in motion and now she's just kind of watching her little puzzle pieces fall into place.
Well, one of those puzzle pieces is starting to warp here, as Francesca notes that Fringilla is a bit different around Kahir. Not afraid, perhaps, but smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And basically says, you know, you got to show you're better than that boy.
Well, yeah, and I think that's why she tells the story about her dad, because she's just like, you don't let no man put you down.
Exactly. And here comes Kahir. I forgot how odd his face looks.
You say this every time we see him.
It's just so angular.
It is very angular.
It's very like Christopher Eccleston, like just as if carved out of marble.
I like it.
But he is back in the saddle, quite literally, right? He has armor, horse, and all. He's just
lording himself around.
And I'm assumingly this is the first conversation that he and Fringilla are really happening since he arrived.
I don't think so. I think it's just a continue. I think they've had conversations in between when he arrived and now.
Yeah, it's patronizing. And I don't know. I feel like the Kahir that we saw a couple of episodes ago was my favorite version.
Yeah, no, he's back as
that's the thing. I think
asshole Kahir's back.
A bit of a regression in this episode, right? Where he's so patronizing, where he says, oh, I don't get me wrong, I'm totally on the same page as you about the elves, but I don't mind that you got distracted from your mission with the White Flame.
That's what he's saying. He's like, the elf thing is not our mission with the White Flame. He says, it's fine that, you know, he's just like, I think it's a bit of a distraction, honestly. And we'll see him, like, get into it with Philivandrel later, which is, like, you know, super annoying and, you know, racist.
It just, to me, feels, I don't know, like...
he's, like, mansplaining.
To. That's exactly what it is.
What the White Flame wants. But
there's this really cool shot, and if you don't notice it the first time, understandably so, because someone who... There's a bunch of, you know, randos walking by, but one of them who happens to pass by... is Dara.
Yes.
Who you might not recognize at first because he has a new hairstyle.
He does have a new hairstyle.
He's got the braids for days. I really like the sequence, though, because it has him walking by and then he sort of stops and turns around, right? Because they sort of talk about, you know, being in Sintra, remember what you're here for. And we sort of rack focus back to focus on that it's him. And then there's this wide shot of Kahir, Fringilla, and Dara, and they all sort of walk away from Fringilla. I just thought it was a really well-filmed couple of seconds.
It was, yeah, and especially for something that's, like, obviously you're meant to see him, you have to, like, coordinate so much there. It's almost like a little bit of a dance.
Yeah, exactly.
And
if you don't know, like, what Dara looks like, I can understand if you miss it the first couple
times. Well, yeah, because he has had a different look up until this moment.
Yeah, he's in the spy mode, right? And also it might be him finally connecting back with his elven roots, so, like, now he's finally getting his hair done the way he wants to.
Well, I think also just having a place to do it.
Yeah, that's true as well. Like, it takes
time and effort to have somebody braid your hair.
The rats can't do it.
No.
Not even the Cinderella rats.
No.
So Geralt is going to tell Ciri, you know, thanks for putting yourself on the line. I'm proud of you. And Ciri is going to now have another epiphany, or not epiphany, but sort of just reveal a bit more to Geralt, right? That wall is slowly eroding when she talks about what she did in, I think it was the end of the penultimate episode of season one, right?
It's right before the last episode, because it's when she kills all the knuckle bones.
That's
boys.
Exactly, when and she killed the knuckle boys.
And then the farmer wife saves her, and then that's the cabin that they meet at. But... yeah, I think that right before that also she says to Geralt, she's just like, I felt that pull again, and I don't think that it wanted to hurt me.
That's an interesting thing.
And he was like, it didn't want to hurt you?
Despite the fact that it's a monster?
Yeah, he was super confused.
So it's interesting, though, because it's clear she has been saddled with this guilt for a while. I mean, she killed four boys that she had previously just been playing knuckle bones with.
But he says to her, he's like, he even makes a joke of it. He's like, how many were there? And she's like, four. And he's like, oh, you have some catching up to do.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be many more people that will die in this like fight of yours. So.
Yeah, well, and especially if she intended to be a witcher in the first place.
Like get death, over it, basically.
Death comes with it. Yeah, essentially this idea of you kind of have to, despite...
Also, I don't want to say they deserved it, but they kind of deserved it.
I mean, yeah, they were going to sell her out for money, and they wanted to turn on her.
And
they like,
seemed like they were going to rape her. Like,
they seemed like it was all her fault behind all this, so they're just like, let's get rid of her. Let's go to Nenica's. I love the set design of this place.
Well, yeah, it's a very, like, Buddhist temple, and right when they walk in, there is a goddess statue, and right out of nowhere, Ciri's like, oh, that's the goddess of fertility, blah, 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 blah.
Melatella.
Yeah, melatonin?
Maybe it puts you to sleep.
I think it's I don't know how to say it either. It's like
it looks like Shiva. Like it's a no-faced, multi-armed goddess.
Yeah, and Siri's just kind of like, I do read.
Very sassy Siri episode.
I do love sassy Siri.
Maybe it's that she feels
this is preteen Siri at her height.
Yeah, but I think maybe it's just because, I don't know, maybe she feels like because the lighting is warmer, she feels less harsh to the cold of Kaer Morhen, but like, she's real
she
saucy
was sassy
this
in Kaer Morhen too. I think she just, whenever she feels comfortable, she gets sassy.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about her with Yare.
Aw, Yare.
It's like, she really is.
Well, Yare has a big old crusheroo.
Well, he's got a big old something, big old book. yeah, so like you mentioned before, Geralt's an alum of Nenica's. Basically, this is where he learns to do the signs.
Yeah, this is where he learns to do the signs.
It opened up his eyes. He did the signs.
And there's like a joke about how he used the telekinetic sign and like perhaps blew up some stuff while he was there.
Yeah, exactly. When they go to Nenica's office, right, she's like, oh, tell him about the time that you basically nearly blew up my office.
Yeah, exactly. So like kind of like, oh, when your dad went here, he was such a god, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So here is Nenica. God, I love this character. I love this actress.
Well, yeah, so you're not familiar with this actress.
No, Adjoa Ondo, I think her name
is. Yes, and she is a primo star of the hit television show Bridgerton.
Yes, coming to Netflix basically like 2 months from now at the time of recording this.
God, I cannot wait. I truly cannot wait for season two.
It's interesting. This episode's called Dear Friend, which implies the letter.
Dear
from the
reader.
Book. Yeah, I was going to say, isn't there letters that are corresponded in
I'm not going to tell you because you've promised me several times that we will watch Bridgerton.
We need the time to do so.
It's an effort and futility for me to ask again. But yes, this actress is amazing in that she plays Lady Danbury, which is like a high and mighty like lady of the Tawn. And she's great.
Yeah, and I think she's a very particular actress.
She has a very like classically trained acting style.
And if you look her up, it makes sense considering that I believe she does have RSC, Royal Shakespeare Company experience.
Yeah, so everything she's saying is almost in like an iambic pentameter. Yeah, like it's exactly. Like very, it has
it
like
has
a,
that importance to
that
it.
That like melodic tone and everything. And, you know, her accent here is much different than the one she does in Bridgerton, which is much more like posh British. Mm-hmm. But like it all still works because she has this vibe.
Yeah, so we also meet Yare, who is one of the students.
He's like one of the best students, apparently.
He's such a little meep.
I mean, Siri is really pretty and he probably doesn't see very many cute girls. And I like when he says like, what does he call her? Something, he uses the word magic, but he calls her like your majesty. Oh yeah, he says your majesty and he says your majesty.
All right, maybe. Yeah, Yare can stay. Unfortunately, I don't know if he does, but Yare.
Yeah, we're not sure. I think he survives, probably.
I would imagine. So it seems like, I like when later on in the series, like, stay here. And he's like lying prone on the ground. Where is he going?
Bleeding everywhere.
No, don't worry. Just stay calm.
Just stay here.
It'll be okay. But yeah, well, Nenica's going to take him to take her to the Orbuculum. We'll get to that later on.
Yeah, we won't have to talk about that.
Nenica has one of my favorite lines of the episode. I don't see any side upon which you are not entirely fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, the way she delivered it is so like chipper almost that it works really
well. Well, it's kind of amusing for her because she knows Geralt. She knows his like his attitude, his like position in life. And now he has this like child surprise. And she's just like, this is hilarious to me.
Yeah, but she also warns him like, dude, you stepped in it. Because not only is she a princess that all these kingdoms are after, she's also this, you know, lockbox of elven magic that makes her even more valuable.
And then on top of that, she says a child of destiny at some point. She references that, which is something that, like, you know, I'm sure has happened many times, and they tend to be like much more significant and then like a regular, like, I don't know, child, I guess.
I if you're a child of destiny, you're really like, that's the
well, there's
sticker.
A significance to their being and their who they belong to and how they exist and all that.
And it's been a while since we've gotten some baby mommy daddy scenes. So here we have Philivandrel and Francesca, the parents.
Oh yeah, so right before that we have the Cahir and Philivandrel.
That happens after.
Oh
this.
Yes, right. They're just like kind of chatting right now.
Yeah, they're decorating, you know, she's decorating the bassinet, and he basically says, like, yeah, that Cahir, the mood has just changed. This dude's a real bummer. Everything feels more vulnerable.
Yeah, because I think up until now it's been kind of casual. Like, they're kind of training them to be soldiers, but there's no intent.
He's training them in human contact. Because let's remember that, you know, when we saw the impressive stuff that happened at the end of episode 1, you know, they're not really masters of swordplay.
No.
Elves are more about bows and ranged weapons.
And so they're being trained in human combat, and I think it's like for them it was more of an effort to round out their skill set, not with any sort of goal of attacking or going to war, mm-hmm. or whatever. And now Philivandro feels like, now that Kahir's here, he feels like there is this push for them to be more something.
Yeah,
and
there's like this aggression.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Kahir basically is like, fuck this. Like, we don't really need to be doing this.
I will say, Philivandrel, man, good partner goals, in my opinion.
For sure.
Like, he basically...
he supports his lady boss.
Yeah, he really... he says, hey, listen, I'm not here to judge your choices. I just want to ask you, what do you need from me? Which, men, take note. This is what you should do. We need more Philivandrels in this world.
Uh-huh.
It says, is this implied?
Well, I think you are an amazing partner and spouse, and like,
but...
you... but you just said something that you literally never do, which Whoa. Is, what do you need from me?
I say that a lot.
Do you? Yeah. I don't think so.
I say that multiple times. I'm like, what do you need me to do while you're doing this?
Yeah, while you're doing this is the key there. Anyway.
this is when I wish I could shapeshift into somebody else. I love you.
No shade, but shade.
So the witchers are talking about, you know, what happened to Vesemir? Yeah. Why did this happen? And then Triss sort of has that, you know, V8 moment, which is, oh, crap. Oh, the mutagen's gone.
Yes, which is kind of wild to me because I'm not sure why they didn't notice a bit earlier that it was missing, because
yeah, I guess she was so caught up in helping Vesemir,
yeah.
that she just didn't notice that this vial, this incredibly important vial, was gone.
Uh-huh. So yeah, that's gone, and that's a bummer and not good at all.
So yeah, we cut to Rian's just sort of like fingering the bottle of mutagen while meeting with Lydia.
Yeah, and he says to Lydia, like, okay, I wasn't able to get Ciri, but I have this, and it has her blood in it, which she's kind of like, okay, that's nice, I guess. Like,
better
not
than nothing, but not better than the thing I wanted you for.
Exactly. She's like, no, again, we need her. Like, she's like very like condescending to
but
him.
But Rience is continuing to push. He says, like, all right, let me just give me a meeting with your employer.
Yeah, she's like, when am I gonna meet this person who's putting us, and she's like, just get it done.
Yeah. Basically, now it seems like she is instructing him to, quote unquote, go to the temple, which we'll know, obviously, is visiting.
Yeah, because she's tracked Geralt to this temple.
Yeah, and she says, hey, you might need some help so your face doesn't get burned off this time. I have some savage brothers you could recruit.
Yeah, so they're like mercenaries, basically.
That's what it seems like. It seems like the pair of twins from Tangled.
Yeah, exactly. They're
I don't
just...
know why I'm making so many Disney references tonight.
Chernabog, Fantasia.
That is true. Yeah, the only Chernabog that I know of was... oh, we talked about this last week. How
we
you,
did.
Your hatred of Fantasia.
Yes. There's also a Chernabog in American Gods.
Is there? You know
there
what?
There is.
I think the character is named Chernabog.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. So let's go to... I'm assuming this is Syntra, where Codringer and Fenn is located.
Yeah, or like in a town.
Because this trid was left there, right? So I'm assuming this
yeah,
is when he's going to walk into
the podunk.
If it's
not in Syntra, it's in, I don't know, I'm not sure. It doesn't really matter because he could transport himself anywhere.
I guess that is true, yeah, when you have that technology.
Oh,
on
it's.
Hand.
I think it's in Temeria.
Okay, so we're going to go to Codringer and...
Codringer.
Codringer. Ring that cod and ring the bell mm-hmm. to ask for Codringer and Fenn. So
delightful characters.
I love them. These are characters from they're alluded to, I believe, in the games. I think they're mostly from the books. It's interesting. You think they might be initially maybe like antique booksellers, but I believe they're actually detectives.
They are. They're like a team of like private investigators, but like they do a lot of they're like knowledge
junkies.
They're
very well researched.
They're knowledge junkies. Like they need to know everything, and they have a lot of like yeah, like books and stuff that
I love that
can
though.
Reference.
I honestly, I would love a spinoff of Codringer and Fenn. It's
oh,
like
they're
its
great.
Own procedural cop
they're
show.
Great. And that actor is from a lot of stuff. He was in the movie adaptation of Phantom of the Opera.
Did he play one of the managers?
Yeah, one of the managers. He was in the early 2000s version of Sleepy Hollow starring Johnny Depp.
Which you showed me for the first time recently. Was he one of the fuddy-duddies?
He was one of the, like, council people that gets murdered.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he was the one that was stooping Sarah, the cook. Yeah, but he's, like, a well-known actor, and I like him. And then Fenn is great. I've
yeah,
never
I
seen her
Fenn.
In anything,
I mean, Fenn
but...
is also you kind of know who is by far the power person of the pair, of much course. Like Angela is for the two of us.
Of course.
You are the Fen.
So yeah, basically like Istrid is like in there and he's asking around a little bit of the bloodline of Syntra. He's yeah. like, I would like to know if you know anything about this bloodline. And then it kind of devolves from there.
Well, it's interesting though, because when he walks in, we'll talk about this later, but like they already know who he is. They know literally everything about him.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Like, and like you said, they are incredibly well researched. I don't know if they anticipated him coming or if they just knew of, you know, one of Stregobor's wards that was wandering around Syntra studying these monoliths.
Yeah, they probably have like little what is it? What is Sherlock's little like street urchins? What are they called? Oh, the irregulars. He probably has like some irregulars.
He's like little boys just running around, be like, oh, I heard there was a man named Istrid.
Yeah, they are little spies.
He's heartbroken.
Little sparrows.
Yeah, exactly. Going back to the Game of Thrones of it all. So back at Nanica, so we have the orbuculum.
Yeah, big ball.
A big green ball that nobody exactly knows what.
And
it
it's
does.
Never explained.
No, it's never explained. I thought at the end, in the final scene,
it's supposed to help you hone your magic. Is the vibe I get?
But basically, it's just a ball on a chain.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So this is where Yare tries to, you know, spit some game, I think, with Ciri.
Yeah, he's kind of like, oh, like, do you need help? Like, can I help you?
Because,
like,
you know, well, that's something, but I have a much bigger tool, knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to, like, play it all, like, off and be, like, a cool guy of,
yeah,
of the temple.
Yeah, and Ciri not denying him, but when he drops the book, embarrassingly, she says, your big old tool almost broke my toe.
Yeah, she's like not having him at all.
Yeah, but I don't think it's like a specific rebuking. I think it's her just like being playful with him, but not like flirtingly playful, I don't think.
Yeah, no, not flirting at all. She has no interest in that. This is like reminds me very much of me at this age. Just like I'm busy. I need to be learning things. I need to be like figuring some shit out. I do not have time for your boy drama.
Mm-hmm. I think
not ask me on a date. Do not ask me to go out with you, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I won't.
Because if you did, then you'd take me to Jarhead and I'd have a miserable time.
That is the only date I've ever been on and it was terrible.
That's how I know it. That's how I'll always remember the movie Jarhead, because that was the one date you've been taken on besides, obviously, our courtship.
Yeah, the one time I said, fine, okay, I've been peer pressured into this date and we've gone to Jarhead? I just watched Jake Gyllenhaal jack off in a bathroom and then you tried to kiss me and I said no.
Specifically right after that scene?
No. I like outside the movie theater.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Because like I would time my moves to parts of the movie.
I honestly like sat on my hands. I was like, don't try to fucking hold my hands during this movie.
Exactly. You were pursuing your own knowledge, you know, big tour.
I have shit to do in my life. I don't have time for that.
Well, someone who has shit to do and is watching this all go down is Yennefer.
Yeah, so Yennefer just like waltzes up in the palace or in the temple.
And if you need a reminder, here's Death Bitch in her head, right, being like, hey, here's a reminder, you've got to find Ciri.
Yeah, I didn't like the like flashes of her in her mind, because I guess at this point she's basically like, you need to find this girl.
Right, remember that she does not know.
Yeah.
She'll find out in a couple minutes, but at this moment she doesn't know who Ciri is. She just has a photo of her, in a manner of speaking, and knows that she is the link to getting her magic back.
Yeah, so she sees her, but she's like, okay, great, this is gonna be super easy. And then all of a sudden, like, she sees Geralt first.
She walks into the room that she thinks she follows Ciri into,
mm-hmm.
and it's the music and it's the moment, and
it's like them running through a field towards each other.
It really was, though. Like, I ship it. I really ship it. I know that they were
same.
They were only together.
No, they're endgame.
Yeah, but they were only together for what? I think 3 episodes in season 1. They spent so much time apart, but just the chemistry between Aya Chalotra and Henry Cavill is so good. I love their tete-a-tete.
Also, I love when she wears that French braid. It just looks so good.
Yeah, and just like the way it's filmed, where it's, you know, him buttoning up his shirt and then like he freezes and she freezes as the camera pans around. Like, yes, it's been a long time. It's coming, but it finally does happen, and I feel like the moment is earned.
Yeah.
I just, it's
no,
so
it's
good.
Great.
Makes
I'm
my
into
heart
it.
Swell.
Yeah, it was really well done, and then, you know, they're like, how did this happen? And he's like, does it really matter?
And they're all over each other.
Yeah, they're just like making out, and Ciri just is like, hey, do you know how to use... sorry, Dad.
Yeah, I like when Freya Allen goes, ooh, sorry.
Sorry.
And she has these like weird hand motions that's going on.
Yeah, she's
on.
Like, I guess I'll back out of here.
Yeah, and Geralt introduces him to her, his dear friend,
which is the episode title.
And I know this also has, I think, connotation in the books as well. Like, this is a famous chapter or just like a passage where mm-hmm. they're consulting with each other and Geralt doesn't know what to call Yennefer, yes. so he just refers to her as his dear friend.
Yeah, which is nice. I think it's funny. And then Yennefer like later will refer to him as her dear friend.
Yeah, exactly. But Yennefer also realizes, like, she's a little, like, how dare you? But
yeah,
then,
she's like, oh, okay.
But the look turns, listen, the way the thing's left, I think dear friend is appropriate.
Yeah,
but
it's not like you've seen each other in
a
while
either.
The
look turns complicated when he finds out, oh, your child surprise is the one I need.
Well, yeah, because she turns around and she's like, oh, shit, like, she's here. And then she's like, who are you? And he's like, oh, this is Ciri. And she's like, oh, you're Ciri. Eek. And so, yeah, that's not great. But then she's like, oh, and you're Yennefer. I heard you once. I saw you in a dream once.
Yeah, remember, that's how season one ended, mm-hmm. was she had that vision of Yennefer. And the last words of the series of the season one are, who's Yennefer?
Yeah, and she basically says that to Yennefer. And Yennefer's like, well, you know, dreams can be powerful tools. And then she also says Geralt told her Yennefer was the most powerful maid she's ever known. And she's like, oh.
Ooh, look at you talking about me. Yeah, my ears are burning.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
like,
from Rhiannes.
She's like, no, me, really? Oh, go on.
Well, let's go back to more bullshit in Syntra.
Yes, let's.
So, now, this is interesting. I don't think we heard this slur before. Pointies mm-hmm. for elves?
Yeah, not great.
Do we
great.
Like that?
No, of course we don't like that.
Well, I think
that.
It's kind of a stupid name anyway.
It is stupid, but a lot of slurs are stupid.
Yeah,
so.
I guess so. We see firsthand Phil Evangel trying to train Dara and these other elves.
Yes.
And he's like, that's not how you do it.
Yeah,
get here, rat boy.
Oh, yeah, and Phil Evangel's just like, you fucking suck. Like, you
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, he pulls a knife on him.
Yeah, he's like, you guys killed all my people. Like, I don't have to be doing this. I don't have to be doing this. I'm doing it so we can have a peaceful situation. So, fuck off,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, but Kahir's like, what are we talking about? We're not fighting. We're mm-hmm. all on the same side. But he's making so many douchey faces.
Yeah, and Phil Evangel's just
only
like.
Only magnified by his angular face.
Yeah, and luckily for Kahir, right before Phil Evangel is going to, like, slice him open, one of the elves is like, ah, the baby's coming early.
Exactly.
It's going to be an early baby.
It's from Bluey.
From Bluey.
For those that were not in the know about the early baby episode of Bluey.
Yeah, the premature baby.
Yeah, I don't know what the crossover is between Bluey and Witcher fans. Probably just the two of us.
I doubt it.
I mean, both are about family in their own way.
A lot of people watch Bluey.
Yeah, I mean, Bandit is like a goofier version of Geralt.
Sure. No, Geralt is for sure Uncle Rad.
Yeah, I guess so.
No, he's Loki's dad.
Oh, pull me hammy.
Pull me hammy.
Yeah, pull me hammy.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Yennefer, they're going to have now sort of a fun little three-way talk where essentially, you know, Yennefer and Geralt are kind of like embarrassing each other.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yennefer makes a reference to, oh, unicorns are real. I had a stuffed one that broke under mysterious circumstances. So I was trying to remember this.
It's not anything you would remember.
But in the games, I think this is a reference to that because in The Witcher 3, there is a scene in which Geralt and Yennefer have sex on the back of a stuffed horse.
It's really dumb.
Ciri and Yennefer are not a part of the first two Witcher
games. No. Well, they're not really a part of the. I mean, there's not as much Yennefer in the novel as well. Mm, so
yeah, but basically, there's a scene where like they come together and they have, you know, well, yeah, and that as well. And then there's like a stuffed horse. I think this is in her quarters, and they end up having sex on it. So I think that's what they're referring to.
Trust you on that one, but. There's no reason to know any context based on the show for that.
Yeah, it just paints a picture in and of itself. So Geralt is going to tell Yennefer that basically he's like, oh, I crossed paths with one of your dear friends.
Yes.
And I, you know, I'm assuming you're hiding out from Aretuza. And she's like, yes. Yes, I am. And there's no other reason why I'm here.
Well, he basically asks her, like, you know, she says, are you here to heal? Like, did something happen to you? And he's like, no, nothing like that. And he's like, what about you? Like, are you here to do some healing of your own? And he's just like, you're not trying to have a baby still, are you? And she's like, no, nothing like that this time. It's a little bit of a larger situation.
I'm on a different child.
It's more, well, I think she could have easily said, I don't have my magic and I'm here to try to get it back. Like, that would have been a great excuse.
Yeah, but I think it's very clear how uncomfortable Yennefer is in this moment, right? Like, she is...
Yeah.
She is, knows what she needs to do, but it has become incredibly complicated now that she knows it's not just some random girl.
Yeah, exactly. So she's, I think, still trying to figure out what she's going to do in this moment and how she's going to get out of this. How she's going to move forward. I don't think she's made the decision yet to steal Ciri. You know, I think she's kind of figuring it out.
It's time for the early baby.
So yeah, we see a little elven birth. It's a little bit touch and go.
Yeah. Literally, Fringilla touches it and then the baby goes.
But no, so she has the baby and the baby doesn't cry. And so it's really scary. And Fringilla goes over and she just holds the baby and starts like tapping it. And then the baby starts crying.
So
and
I'm intrigued. She says it wasn't magic, but do you think it was a literal magic touch?
Oh, like in a metaphorical way, maybe. Yeah. No, I think it was just that, you know, this sometimes happens. Babies are born and they don't, you know, they're not breathing. They're not crying. And you do have to kind of like do a little manipulation, suck out some juice, yeah, like tap them on the back a little bit.
Say, did not happen with Asher. He was loud AF when he came out.
Well, we cut him out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That means he can kill Macbeth.
Yeah, he can kill Macbeth.
But everyone looks so happy.
Yeah, they're holding the baby.
I mean, it's a literal royal baby, right?
It's a little bite. It's the first elf.
Yeah. And so all the elves are cheering. Even Fringilla is like, oh my God.
I've never experienced anything so joyful before.
Yeah. Considering her life up to that point, that is understandable.
Well, and even Philivandril is like thanking Fringilla. And he's like, what did you do? Dark necromancy? And she's like, no. I just held the baby.
I touched the baby.
Yeah. I kept it warm. Just warmth. And he's just like, thank you. Like,
so,
sobbing.
Ciri is going to find Neneka in her nighttime ritual, which is she essentially lights candles, not only for, you know, the late crowd, but also as sort of a memorial service.
Yeah, every time she lights a candle, she like says goodbye or you know, hello to like somebody that she's lost, just to kind of remember them.
I do find it interesting. So Ciri calls out two specific, I can't say people, because one of them is Roach.
Yes.
And the other one is Mousesack. It's interesting that she does not shout out any other family members.
Yeah, it's a little odd, but I do think that for her, Mousesack was somebody that always supported her, that, you know, she had like a really good relationship with, and that she felt like did try to protect her in the end. I think she's having a little bit of a tough time with Calanthe at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's what she says directly right now, right? Where she says, I'm frustrated that nobody told me who I was until I was with Geralt. So it makes sense in the moment to obscure your family's name, but kind of sucks that all those people died.
She's also like, I don't know why, like, but my grandmother hated elves, you know? Yeah. She's like, and so as they talk about that, she's like, I'm elf, like I'm part elf, but my grandmother hated elves. Like, how do I, like, but she loved me. She was like, how do I reconcile that?
And I love Neneka's quote here. Hatred is an endless circle of fear and desperation, and who can tell which one came first? It really is the chicken and the egg thing of fear fuels desperation, which fuels fear, and that's the reason why hatred is such a common tenet amongst humanity since the very beginning.
Well, and then she also has something where she says, you know, like, hypocrisy comes in many forms, like,
right? And it's this idea of, you know, Calanthe was hypocritical because she wanted to protect Ciri.
Yeah, there's reasons for hypocrisy sometimes, even if we don't understand them.
And Ciri, you could be the one to finally break this cycle of hatred.
Yeah, which I think she could be.
Yeah. So everyone's celebrating back in Syntra. You know, everyone's singing
raucous party.
There's a cute shot of like the new elven family like swaying happily together.
And they say, she says, like, oh, my, our love, our little love.
And meanwhile, Kahir and Fringilla are watching the celebration. Kahir's like, you know what this reminds me of? When the usurper got overthrown.
Good times.
We raged for days.
Mm-hmm.
But he also plants a little seed amongst that happy soil. He says, well, this is interesting. They have a full pure blood heir now. Do you think they need us anymore?
Yeah, he also points out that, like, he's been in touch with the White Flame, and yep. the White Flame's on his way.
He's
and
showing she's, up any day now.
Well, and she was like, oh, he's, you've talked to him? Like, I haven't really gotten word from him.
And
so.
Here comes Death Bitch to be like, ha, 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 your power and your freedom will leave you.
Yeah, so...
So clearly, things are a bit up in the air for Fringilla. I think the Kahir seeds are working in that she is now beginning to doubt a bit her BFF-ness with Francesca. Unfortunately, that, you know, powerful girl power duo may not be long for this world.
No.
So let's get back to Yennefer and Geralt, who are left by themselves. They're able to talk a little bit through what happened, right? Where she says, you hurt me, and he's like, likewise. And this is when she reveals about what happened last episode. She ran into Yaskier and I think this is the first time we actually get the nickname Firefucker dropped, which is
yes.
a fantastic nickname for Rhiannes.
Yeah. He is a Firefucker.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. And so Geralt, you know, says, oh, this now makes sense. He probably wants info about Ciri. She says, why would they need info? Why would they want info about Ciri? And Geralt's like, all right, insight check. You definitely are lying about why you're here.
Well, yeah, he's like, I've heard your heartbeat racing this entire time. What the fuck's up?
Yeah, and she basically talks about, you know, some wounds refuse to heal. And this is where we have the moment that you talked about before, where she says, you know, he asks, do you want to have a child? And she says, no, but again, having a child, I think, means very something different in this circumstance.
Yeah, and I think for her, she's also just kind of, like, trying to figure out what to do. Like, she's like, I need to steal your child surprise. Like, but, you know, so I think that that's probably making her heart rate race.
So Fen and Codringer, truly like us, are, like, playfully bickering with each other as they are talking right. through trying to do this research.
Yeah, no, they're great. I love them so much. I think that Fen is hilarious. She's like, no. But yeah, so basically he tells them, you know, where to start, which is like, I want to know a little bit more about the bloodline of Syntra. Yeah.
There is a gene that he keeps seeing pop up that is,
yes.
Lord, I'm going to try to pronounce this, Lyshardra Thard Lara.
Yes, the Richard.
Which sounds like if you just smushed a bunch of Scottish words together, you'd get that word.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know, like, where the genetic terminology for the Witcher is coming from. I can't say that I'm a geneticist myself.
What?
But I guess that's how you say it.
You are constantly making Punnett squares on the walls of our
imagine.
Such a geneticist.
Imagine.
You have so many shriveled peas. I'm up to my knees in peas.
That would be really weird if that was something that I just did on the side.
That was your hobby, was geneticism?
No, just drawing Punnett squares.
It's like, oh, right. Well, this time maybe it'll be... I mean, I sort of drew one up in my mind when we had a child with blue eyes. As
well,
to, like,
we looked it up.
Yeah.
We looked it up.
So, yeah, we had our own Fens in a manner of speaking.
12% chance he would have blue eyes.
So Fen is going to translate a document that talks about this, like, history of elves, right? About how the elves created a weapon after humans ravaged their land. But it's actually a mistranslation. It's not
mm-hmm.
a weapon.
It's a
warrior.
Soldier, yeah.
It's a person.
Exactly. I feel like this was a really fun scene from a nerd perspective, because I love that they were like, oh no, like, we just found out something, like, they were geeking out so hard.
Yeah.
But there's also something to know that they have a copy of Hen Gedimedith's, which is like a incredibly rare book, Elves and Humans, which is what Istrid says. Like, he's like, oh, I can't believe you have this.
He's like, yeah, I got the only copy probably in the entire continent.
Thanks to the universe's
The
Witcher Wiki, you can read an excerpt of this.
Oh, interesting. So, like, did somebody copy a page and transcribe it?
I truly don't know.
Wow. People are committed, and we love it.
Oh, they are.
Dara's going to sort of, like, I don't know, give his captain's log to the owl, basically realizing, oh, okay, he's putting two and two together, two from last season even, of, oh, Ciri is the reason why Nilfgaard came to Syntra, and I remember when I hung out with Ciri, this is no good.
Yeah, exactly. So he's just like, he's kind of putting two and two together on that. And then the other thing is he's talking about, like, oh, this blood, they start reading, is this when they read the myth of Laura Dune?
So they talk about it a little bit.
Not read it.
Yeah, they say that Laura Darn was the one who was responsible for creating the warrior/weapon.
Yes, exactly. And that They say something to the effect of, like, they'll be able to, like, I don't know, shake mountains and move. Whatever.
Yeah, it's this idea that once the humans ravage their lands, like, it's what she talked about, I think, last.
No. Yeah, but I'm saying that they do say something that's like, oh, no, that's Ciri. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it's this idea of humans, you know, basically conquered the elves, but they created essentially this human form of this weapon who will then be able to take the lands back on behalf of the elves one day. And
yes,
that's what Laura Dern talked about last episode, right? Of like, oh, you know, when such and such happens, mm-hmm. then I shall have my revenge.
Yeah, so he's putting it together, kind of pointing out like, okay, this could be a problem. So, you know, that's, but I think that I wish that we'll get more of Fenn.
I know. We have spoiler alert for the rest of the season. No more Fenn and Codringer.
Yeah, I mean, that's
this.
Like not really a spoiler other than they just like don't appear.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they'll become big heroes in the 11th hour of this series. Ciri is going to basically, she finds Yare's book on the floor, it seems?
No, I think he gave it to her. So okay. She has it with her and then she kneels down with her orb, which is, by the way, another word for crystal ball. Like it's
oh,
like,
interesting.
But I don't think that's what, it's not used for that here. It's just supposed to like sense magic, I think. Mm-hmm. So like when she uses magic, it'll glow.
Okay.
I think. So like it's like kind of like a, I don't know what we would say.
A mood ring.
Yeah. Or like, what's an educational tool? You know, like something will light up if you get it right or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Or like a remembrall. When you've forgotten
yes.
something, it'll light up.
Exactly. So
we should note here also, Ciri opens up a chapter on Ithilien's prophecy, mm-hmm. which we've talked about. It talks about earlier in this episode that she has been quoting parts of it. We saw part of it in the dream as well.
So she like realizes that's the prophecy. But yeah, so she kneels down, she puts the book down, and then like all of a sudden feels on the back of the book that she has blood on her hands, and she's like, what the F? And she's like, put it down in a puddle of blood.
And she's like, oh, there actually is a trail of blood leading
yes.
to this dying boy.
Yeah, and so she's like, what happened? What happened? And all of a sudden, here comes Rance.
Rance and the Michelet brothers. They'll call them the Michelin men.
The Michelin men.
So Ciri is actually going to use the orb
yes.
to brain one of the brothers.
I would for sure do that. It's a definite
yes,
medieval
it's
ball
it's
and
it's
chain.
Mace.
Yeah.
And so, but Rance is going to surround her with fire. Luckily, it seems like Geralt and Yim were having their sort of tete-a-tete nearby, and so they're just going to
burst
in.
Yeah, they weren't sleeping, which is funny. Or maybe they were together.
Boy. Yeah, there's no unicorns in the way. So Geralt's going to say, hey, Yennefer, go take Ciri. Geralt is going to face off basically 5-on-1. It is
all the
Michelin men against Geralt.
This is probably the best fight scene we've seen so far, not between like a monster and
150,000%.
Yeah.
I loved this. And yeah, like you said, it's maybe it's not Witcher-esque because it's human on human as opposed to, you know, Witcher on monster, but I loved the techniques of them. It's a little chintzy, but I love it. Just like the action
the
movie
slow-mo.
Cliche. Yeah, of them slowing things down as like Geralt, you know, looks off to the side and sees Rance walking away.
Well, because I think it's meant to be like his point of view. So like how he sees things, which is like everything is a little bit faster for him.
Yeah, and I didn't remember. Did he take his elixir? I don't think he
No, he
did.
Not at this moment. No.
Yeah, so the fact that he's able to still stave them off and even not drinking his elixir is awesome.
He's powered by daddy love to save his little girl.
I can say firsthand, it's the most powerful, you know.
He has that adrenaline surge, like lifting
steroids.
A car off your child.
Yeah, but in this case, it's punching people in the face.
Yes.
I mean, I love, even just outside of the slow-mo, the tactics like him making one of the brothers stab the
yes.
other one. And I think my personal favorite is he uses
yeah.
one of the signs to blast
saying.
One of them up, holds the sword out
yeah,
so the
and
guy
stabs
falls
it
on
his
sword.
Head.
Yeah,
yeah, it's disgusting.
It's disgusting, but it is, I think, maybe one of my favorite kills.
Yeah.
Just like, gravity do the work.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So they're like, he's doing all of this, and Yennefer and Ciri basically are, they hold themselves up in a closet, basically.
Yeah, essentially they are like,
they back them into a corner.
They're like, we don't know where to go, and so basically, and so was it the orb that was glowing? I couldn't tell.
Yes, it was the orb that was glowing, but it only started glowing when she started using magic. So
right.
Yen is like, well, at first, Ciri is like, you're the most powerful mage ever, and you can't get us out of here. She was like, that's another story.
Yeah, she's like, listen, I've done this for like 5 episodes where I had to explain to people
yeah.
that my magic is gone. Okay, I don't have time for this.
And she's like, but I'm going to teach you something. It's the first thing I ever learned, which is portaling.
See the outcome, make it happen, which I believe is that, I think that's what Istrid actually told her word for
yes.
word in her first
when
episode.
When she makes a portal.
When she was a little piglet.
Yeah, so she basically instructs Ciri how to do it, and she does it, and they make a portal, and then right at the last moment, I guess Rance has blasted a hole through that door.
Yeah, like he's blasted some holes. Like it's a little bit like Jack Torrance in
yeah.
The Shining. Like he can poke his head through, but Geralt is going to dispose of the last Michelin Man.
Yes.
And, like, basically gets Rience to back off and portal away. But he can only just watch as he sees Ciri and Yennefer disappear through the portal.
Well, he's like, Yen, don't do this.
And she says, I wish I could.
Yeah, and so she takes her.
So they're going to pop up in a dark building. We're going to put a pause on that discussion because there's more to talk about in spoilers, specifically from a feedback capacity. Mm-hmm. There's one particular thing that I want to read you. But let's finish things off with a betrayal.
A betrayal.
So Triss is going to tell Vesemir, bad news, the mutagen is gone. Worse news, I'm gonna head out.
I gotta go. Gotta go. She's like, I don't trust this Ciri girl. Like, there's nothing against her, but we gotta get rid of her.
Yeah.
So she's gonna go visit Aretuza and...
Yeah, and this is the point that I was talking about, where they talk about Laura Doran, in her mm-hmm. dying breath, spared a curse for 10 generations until the columns of space, time and space tremble and
yes,
open for
this
my
is,
people.
This is what I was talking about. The columns of time and space tremble. This is exactly what Ciri's
doing.
Yeah,
the monoliths.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I couldn't remember the phrasing.
But again, it's this fun thing linking back to last episode where previously we thought they were just monuments like you might build for Francesca.
They are the columns of time and space.
Which is an amazing title in general.
Is that what you call your penis? That was funny, right?
Do I call my penis the columns of time and space?
Column.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you get lost in there, you're going to be there and gone for days. Wake up in another world.
That was a really good joke.
I love it, personally.
It was really stupid.
And that's why I love it, and that's why I love you.
Aww.
So here we are back at Aretuza. Taseya, it's been a long time since we've seen her.
Yeah.
She is just sort of ruminating over the wanted poster of Yen, saying, oh, it doesn't look like her at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Triss portals in and is basically saying, I'm loyal to you, so I'm going to sell Ciri out.
Yeah, she's like, this Ciri girl, not good.
Yeah, so the implication is that that Triss is going to tell Taseya, so many T's in there, mm-hmm. basically just everything about Ciri, who she is, the Child of Destiny stuff.
Yeah, the power that she has. Like, yeah. And I think for Taseya, that's like catnip. She's like, gotta go get this girl, gotta make her a sorceress.
Right, because
again,
gotta
get her.
She is this source of
always on the hunt.
Power. You know, essentially this is like... an oil well, and now we have a bunch of, you know,
yeah.
companies fighting for propriety to the land.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And now we're throwing her in there with her.
Yeah. So, ending on that note, anything else you want to bring up about the episode proper before? We'll do a small spoiler section here, because, again, that hole is slowly closing.
It is, yeah.
Towards stuff that is, you know, happening in episodes coming up. So we'll mention a couple things, and I have an email to read, but that's about it.
Okay. Yeah, no, nothing on my end other than... You know,
R.I.P. Roach.
God, why would you bring it up again?
I'm bringing it full circle.
R.I.P. Roach.
Like a portal, full
okay.
circle.
All right.
All right. Well, I'll pipe in here my little ditty a la Yaskier to take us out of the regular section into the spoiler section. Again, if you haven't watched the next two episodes, feel free to tune out now. We're going to be back next week. But for those of you that want to stay, here come the spoilers.
I told you to toss a coin. You ate it up like sirloin. But now it's 2022, and I've got a song anew, and I want you to join. Post show recaps. Podcasts and stuff that's bizarre. So join Patreon, join Patreon, join.
Join our patrons and support the arts.
Okay, so like I said, only a couple of big ticket items from the spoiler section. Just, it mainly comes down to Yennefer, because
yeah.
now we know what's going to happen. Mainly next episode is going to be Yen and Ciri, you know, finding their way.
Yeah, Ciri feeling betrayed, Yen feeling like stuck.
Yeah, Yen actually now getting to know her and being like, oh, actually,
made a mistake.
She's a good kid.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have taken this deal. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of sucked watching the happiness of the little elven baby being born.
This was tough for me to talk about this episode.
Knowing what's going to happen next episode.
I don't know how I'm going to talk about that.
That's going
to
be rough.
We might have to, like, just have you talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'll just narrate it while you take a lap, maybe.
Well, yeah, we'll, like, plug my ears. But, yeah, so, I mean, that was tough to see. And then I think also from a perspective of Francesca and Philivandro, which is, like, you see this, like, whole unit and her feeling so hopeful and it's going to be taken away.
Which then explains why she does what she does in episode 8, which, as I mentioned before, like, I wouldn't call it badass, but I think certainly that fierceness that we saw in episode 2.
Ruthless.
Ruthless is a great word for it. The Ruth leaves very promptly in episode 8 when she decides to really get her revenge. And assumingly this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And we, you know, some seeds get planted with the Fringilla and Kahir stuff. She's getting at her big badass moment next episode. But at least in this moment, she's starting to appear under the thumb of him.
Right, exactly. And so I think that she... You know, this is like we talk about with Fringilla and her getting power and it being taken away. And that's feeding the death bitch. You know, that's what she lives on, is that like that like crisis, you know, that like, you know, giving them power and then taking it away is actually making her stronger. And then giving Francesca hope and then taking that away makes her stronger.
Right.
So that's the whole thing, is like she wasn't ever going to give Francesco or Fringilla what they wanted. It was all about giving them a circumstance to give her power.
Right. It's this idea of the monkey's paw, right? You get what you want, but there's a downside to it. In this case, the downside is essentially like losing out on the thing that you wanted.
Yeah, and all of that strife, it's the strife that she feeds on.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. She feeds on misery, much like social media.
Yeah.
A couple of questions to finish out this spoiler section, sort of just ruminate on things overall, because, yeah, this is the first episode we get introduced to Nenica's. We're going to spend one more episode here. Geralt's
very
briefly going to consult with Nenica one more time. Stefan asks, should we have gotten more time at Melitella's temple? Does the show move too fast? What do you think? I guess we'll talk about this in a larger sense next week once we actually finish it off. But now that we've spent like a whole episode here, did you want more time at Nenica's?
No, I don't think we needed to spend more time there. I really like Nenica, but I feel like if we had done with the temple what happened with Kaer Morhen, we would be over it very quickly.
Yeah, that's
because there's
true.
Also nothing to do there apart from teach her magic. So unless you were going to accomplish that, which we're not going to, there's no point to staying there.
Yeah, I will also point out that I believe in the after show that they did, I think Lauren Schmidt-Hissrich did say that she wants more Nenica
season 3.
So
of
I would
course.
Imagine that, you know...
I'm not saying let's be done with it. I'm just saying for this season, I don't think it was necessary.
What did you think of this is going to be the first of the trio that is going to end season 2 together, the trio that The Witcher is known for? Did you like the introduction to this dynamic, knowing this is going to be like the, I want to say, OTP, OTT, as it were?
Yeah, it's the family. It's the Witcher fam. I mean, when you read anything about The Witcher prior to this show, if you've read the books, if you've seen the games, if you've, you know, whatever, it's like Yennefer, Geralt, Ciri. And that's the season 1 trio that we followed. It just was timey-wimey, you know?
Yeah, they were all separated. So, yeah, I like it. And I think their initial... Like, you could feel that chemistry between the three actors.
Yes, exactly.
As well.
They seem like they have a good time on set.
Yeah, so I think that lends a lot of hope for what the rest of the series is going
exactly.
to be. Exactly. But the big takeaway from a couple of our commenters here is about Yennefer's choice. Because, again, this is something that is very much off script. Lose the magic storyline doesn't happen in the books. So Stefan asks, in your opinion, is Yennefer redeemed by the end of the season?
Yes.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, she's put herself in a pretty tricky situation where she's also, I don't want to say she's only human because she's not only human, but I think she's somebody who like is a whole person who makes mistakes. It's just because of her status and because of her capabilities, when she makes those mistakes, they're 10 times bigger than a little mistake. So, but I think the fact that she... you know, goes back on it. She doesn't just take magic and run, which she's done in the past. You know, she's gotten what she's needed from Geralt and she's run away. And then like she finds out that the wish was what made them like it. She runs away and she's not running away here. She's like facing it head on. So I don't think that, or I do think that she redeems herself. The next episode isn't going to be that.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a slower turn towards that than we would like. What we would have liked is for her in this episode to see Ciri and see Geralt and say, nope, not happening.
Yeah.
But she's not perfect.
I mean, it's tough. And these are the tropes and stories that I don't love. Like, either the liar revealed or, like, character does something they shouldn't and, like, mopes for a little while. I do think, and I guess we'll look upon this better in episode 8, I do think that the turn for Yennefer is a little sudden. But to your point, maybe the turn hasn't completely happened yet, where I think things are going to be really awkward in season 3. I do not think Ciri is going to be easy to forgive or forget what Yennefer did to her.
Definitely not. But I do think also Ciri is not going to be living or forgetting what she did to all of those Witchers too. So I think there's going to be turmoil on both sides.
Well, let me expose you here to a Riley essay.
Okay.
This has actually only been an excerpt of it. I'm going to try to read the rest next week. Because basically, Riley, huge fan of the books, huge fan of the video games. He loves the show. He feels like it was a huge improvement over season 1. He really loves Yennefer. The more and more I sit with it, he writes, the more I absolutely hate the Yen arc after episode 4 of season 2.
Oh no.
A big thing for me is a lot of what Yen does this season is insanely out of character.
Yeah.
I don't think it grows the character all that much. It is kind of a generic fantasy story. It sacrifices a beautiful story from the books and really is hampering season 3 in my opinion. So I can see the appeal of giving Yen a complex anti-hero arc here in season 2. But what the arc actually does with Yen as a character is basically antithetical to the character of Yennefer from the books, the games, and the Yen of season 1. A huge part of her is wanting to protect children, as we see in her desperation to save the baby in episode 4. We remember that when she was falling through the portals. This part isn't even tied to her wanting her ability to have a child. This is just the best part of Yennefer, who is this flawed, morally ambiguous person that she wants to protect the innocents. So basically everything Yen does in this latter half of season 2 is the opposite of this character for me. She has a moment where she basically says, "I never would have done this to Ciri if I had known she was your kid, Geralt." That is such a misread of Yen. Yen would do a lot of terrible things to achieve her goals, to achieve what she believes is the greater good. But harming children, any children, is not something she would be able to do. So basically, he sort of is saying that, you know, she has one rule, like Sawyer, she doesn't get involved with children.
Here's the thing, though. I don't think Ciri's a child. Like, I think that she's not yet a woman. but I don't think that Yennefer sees her when she sees her, Volothmir presenting her, sees her as, like, a child. You know, I think she sees her as, like, maybe a young woman, you know, which in that regard, I think changes the narrative a little bit. So in yes, I agree that the Yen stuff is a little like off track character arc wise from the books, but I don't hate it. And I love the final episode where she like gives herself over to save Ciri.
Yeah.
Because I mean, yes, I agree. It's not great for her to take Ciri.
No, of course not.
But I also don't think it's like to the extent where she's saying, "Oh, I would rip a child open for magic." Like, I don't think that's what's happening. I think she would even struggle if it wasn't Geralt's child, you know? So I think just because she's a child surprise doesn't mean she thinks of her as a child.
Yeah, but I mean, what I think is that it's a rash decision. I agree that the line that she says basically implies like, "Oh, you know, I wouldn't do it if I knew that it was your child, Geralt." I do agree with you that I do wonder if it was any child, she would portal the child and then, like she does in episode 7, get to know the child and realize that she made the mistake.
Yes, exactly. I think she would always have problem doing this and feel desperate. You know, this is like a very human thing to do where you like you make a mistake, but you don't know it's a mistake yet. Like, you think it's a mistake. You're not sure if it's a mistake.
Yeah, the reason why you do the thing in the first place is because you think it's right.
Or you're sort of backed into a corner, and then you over time, whether or not it's, like, days or minutes or an hour, you're like, "Oh, shoot, should I try to fix this? Should I text whoever I, you know, should I go back? Should I try to, like, change things?"
Yeah.
And then that's your gut telling you made a mistake, but, like, sometimes that takes time to get that gut check. So,
yeah.
Or, like, figure out what to do. So I think during the next episode, that's where she's like checking herself. She's like, "Oh,
I mean," oopsies. That being said, I do not disagree, and I've said this before with Riley's statement about how I do think the Yennefer arc loses the wheels a bit after episode 4, basically after the Cahir stuff.
It loses it, and then, like, in my opinion, is it redeems itself in the last episode. But
yeah, I mean, make of it what you will. We'll talk more with Riley next week, where another thing that I agree with, he talks about the Yen Ciri stuff he's going to focus on next episode, which I enjoyed, and I do think, in retrospect, I really would have liked to get a little bit more of. I guess that it was sort of been pushed into season 3.
Well, this is the problem with having 8-episode seasons. You really can't delve too far into this stuff. It's the same thing that we felt in season one with Ciri and Geralt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if they're not going to meet until the last episode, you're not going to get anything.
Yeah, and that's rough because I think that was something that a lot of people had issues with, and it felt like they almost did it again in episode 7. I mean, at least this is a little bit more of an extended time, but it's almost, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, in a manner of speaking.
Don't expect things to happen over long periods of time because it'll be pretty compact.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
Short and sweet.
That is the show in a nutshell.
And it's like, I love Riley coming to us with all of this feedback because it is, he's such a fan, but it's also like, there's only so much you can expect from a television adaptation. If you go on Reddit, don't go on Reddit because people rip this show a new one. They're just like, this isn't right, that isn't right,
yeah,
blah, 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 blah. And
actually,
it's like, oh, God.
It's really interesting where if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores.
Yeah, it's
had
not that great.
Low critical score and high audience score for season one and low audience score and high critical score for season two. And I know for season two, it really did seem like a lot of book readers just really flamed it for not doing things the way it was done in the books. And look, let me also say that I think people have a right to talk about
their
things
opinions
that they don't like
are fine. Yeah.
I think, like, again, I think I respect and I think I agree with a lot of what Riley is saying.
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, I think there's a way to go about it and also to remember that.
Well, and that's why I say I like the way Riley goes about it, which is like, this is how I feel.
Yeah, and also at the end of the day, let's all remember this is an adaptation, ultimately.
But truly, people are losing their minds.
I mean, in general.
Especially the Volothmir stuff. People are like, who the fuck is Volothmir?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Riley is also someone who's not a huge fan of Volothmir. For him, I think it's more so that we don't need this quote-unquote big bad.
No,
ironically enough, this isn't a video game and we don't need it. I'm fine with it. I think we'll talk about it more when we actually get rid of her episode 8. But I agree that I don't think we needed something to work towards.
No, the fact that she ends up being a creature from another dimension, I think, is important, but that could have been anything, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, next week, we're going to get into it with episode 7 of The Witcher Season 2. We're almost at the end. And then, who knows when, you know, Season 3 is going to be coming around.
Well, they already started filming. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about that. Or they're going to be filming starting in March.
Yeah, and we know that Blood Origin is coming at some point in 2022.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
So, yeah. A lot of dark stuff happening. It is a penultimate episode of a TV show, and as is the case nowadays, that means that a lot of shit's going to go down.
Yeah, so this is Volothmir.
No, this is about, you know, Yennefer and Ciri sort of doing their, you know, on the road thing.
Isn't that the title of the episode, though?
Oh, yeah, Volothmir. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Despite, she is not making that much of an
appearance. No, but the title of the episode is Volothmir.
Yes. Okay. So
I was like, what are you talking about?
The only thing is it basically ends with Volothmir possessing Ciri, the little fireflies going into her. But this is where we get the death of the elven baby.
No!
This is where we're going to get, though, Fringilla's badass moment where she freezes everybody and kills everybody. We're going to get the return of Yarp and Zigrin. The dwarfs are coming back, which is very fun for the first time since the dragon episode.
Yeah, so that'll be good.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff happening with The Witcher. I hope you're in for the last couple weeks of the ride here. Again, subscribe to our Witcher Only feed at PosherRecaps.com/WitcherPod. There's a lot of other stuff happening in the fantasy world. So actually, just released to the main feed. It has been part of the patron feed for quite some time. But R. Philly and Adam Humphreys were covering Arcane, which is another fantasy show, an animated fantasy show on Netflix. Angela and I
actually... Another video game-based animated show.
Yeah, out of League of Legends, though I would say actually much less based in League of Legends than the world of The Witcher is. Angela and I have watched two episodes.
It's very good.
Yeah, what's the consensus?
I like it.
It's very, I enjoyed it a lot. I think the characters are interesting. The animation's really cool.
Yeah, I really liked the first episode. The second episode, I was like, but now we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But check out, they have recaps of all 9 episodes. And then actually, I just premiered a new podcast that is probably out by the time you are listening to this. In fact, it might even be in the Witcher podcast feed if you're subscribed to it because we're dropping it there. So next week, Angela, there is a new fantasy series coming to Amazon Prime. It is called The Legend of Vox Machina.
Mm-hmm.
It is an animated adaptation of Critical Role, which is an online group that plays Dungeons and Dragons. They essentially took one of their campaigns and they adapted it into an animated series.
Yeah, this is like right up your alley. You love that shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's exactly something you'll be incredibly interested.
Oh, I shan't be watching it.
Yeah, it's tough. Your love of fantasy will only go so far.
Yeah, for me, I'm not like the biggest fan of campaign for you, this is right up your alley because you love watching video games. You love watching like Dungeons and Dragons
stuff.
But it's
interesting though because now they're going to try to adapt this improvised gameplay into a story. So I don't know. Maybe I'll try to like use that as a litmus test. Maybe I'll make you watch
the Adventure Zone comic.
Right, it's a very similar thing. I don't know, maybe I'll have you watch the first couple episodes and see.
I don't think so.
All right, you watch those, I'll watch Bridgerton.
You won't, so I won't.
I'll start watching Bridgerton, and then you'll watch Vox Machina. It'll happen. So Rich and I are covering Vox Machina. This week we do a kickoff podcast where it's essentially the basics of what Dungeons & Dragons are, you know, what Critical Role is, some of the characters. So whether you're a newbie like me or a veteran like Rich, you really get the lowdown on what to expect. Those episodes are dropping 3 at a time on Fridays on Amazon Prime. So if you're in the mood for more fantasy, and who isn't, be sure to check it out. And of course, Angela and I are talking about the X-Files. We have made our way into Season 9, which is weird in and of itself. That's happening on the Bloom Files, as well as all the other stuff going on post-show recaps. So that's going to do it for this week's Witcher podcast. Next week, Season 2, Episode 7. If you want to be like Stefan Riley and write in your thoughts about the series and the season as a whole, mike@postshowrecaps.com, or write it in the Witcher channel in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. We are eternally grateful to all of you who are listening. Truly the greatest tool and the biggest tool is not knowledge, but fans. And we are very happy to have you. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Season 2, Episode 7. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.